Osho, Christianity, the deadliest poison, and Zen, the antidote to all poisons. Talks given at the Osho Commune International, Pune, India. Discourse number 8.
Our beloved Master, Yakudan once asked his disciple, Onyan, I heard that you know how to deal with the lions. Is that true? Onyan replied, yes, it is. Yakudan asked, how many of them do you get and deal with? 6, Onyan replied. Yakudan then said, I also know how to deal with the lions. Onyan asked, how many do you get? Yakudan replied, only one. Onyan then commented, 1 is 6, 6 is 1. Later on, when Onyan visited Isan, Isan said, I have heard that when you were with Yakudan, you had a conversation about getting and dealing with lions. Is that true? Yes, it is, replied Onyan. Isan asked, do you continue to deal with them, or do you sometimes stop doing that? Onyan replied, when I want to, I deal with them, and when I want to stop, I stop. When you stop, asked Isan, where do the lions go? Onyan replied, stopping is stopping.
The Christianity I have been told by the Christian friend is based on faith. Family is its foundation stone. But family is also the foundation stone of all neurosis, of all psychosis, of all kinds of mental sicknesses. Of all kinds of social problems. It is also the base of the races, of the nations, of the war. Family has to be understood because it has no future. It has already outlived its existence, its necessity. But we have been conditioned, not only Christians but everybody, that family is a great contribution to the world. The reality is totally different. I have to go point by point in detail because the problem of family is one of the most serious problems. The first thing, the family is a prison. It wants to keep control of the children, of the wife. It is a very tight group of people, and they have made this prison sacred. But the results are very ugly. Every kind of imprisonment prevents spiritual growth. What do you think, why Buddha renounced the world and why Mahavira renounced the world? In fact, they were not renouncing the world, they were simply renouncing the sin. Nobody has said this before. Because how can you renounce the world? Wherever you are, the world is. You can only renounce the family, but all religious scriptures, including Christian scriptures, are continuously lying to the people. The talk of renouncing the world, it distracts you completely from the fact that all these people were renouncing the family. Because the family was such that they could not grow within it. The family was programming every child according to its prejudices. If you born in a Christian family, you will be continuously programmed for Christianity. And you will not ever suspect that your conditioning may be wrong. Your conditioning may be preventing you from going beyond. Just the other night, when the wife and the son of the sannyasin who has died arrived, the son was very much excited the whole day, and he told the sannyasin he would like to come here and live forever. But when he heard me, he freaked out. He told to the sannyasins, I am a Christian and I believe in God and I am not a homosexual. His prejudiced mind could not see that I have not told that all Christians are homosexuals. I have told only the monks and the nuns are homosexuals, are lesbians. This is how people go on missing points. He should have heard in his mind through his interpretation of the programming that I am calling all Christians homosexuals. And he proudly says, I believe in God. Without understanding a single word, what does believe mean? Believe means you don't know. It is utterly in ignorance that people have forced the idea on you and you carry it as if you know God. A man who believes in God should be ashamed, not proud. Believing is hiding your ignorance. Knowing is a totally different matter. But Christianity and all other religions go on confusing people's minds They never make the distinction between believing and knowing. A blind man can believe in light, but that is not going to hell. One needs eyes to see the light, and then there is no need to believe. When you know something, is there any need to believe in it? Do you believe in light? Do you believe in the moon? Do you believe in the star? You simply know. There is no question of belief. Belief arises only for fiction, for lies, not for truth. Every belief system is a hindrance for spirituality. But that young man, I could see at his face, I could see at his eyes, and I immediately inquired that what was wrong with him. So young, and has already become dead. His father was younger than him, who had come here to meditate and who wanted to be a sannyasin after hearing me everything about Christianity, and he wanted to live here his whole life. His mother is far more younger than him. He wants to come here and stay for a few days, meditate. She loved the place, she loved the people. She was touched very much by your ceremony for her husband. Nowhere in the world she would have got that ceremony for her husband. Death, according to Christianity, is a taboo. You should not talk about it. And death is taboo. And life is also taboo. You should not live it. Death, you should not talk about it. And life, you should not live it. They don't leave you any alternative. Neither you can live, nor you can die. They keep you hanging in the middle, half dead, half alive. This creates schizophrenia. You are not allowed to be total in anything, in life, in death, in love. Only partially involved. A man who is partially involved is only partially alive. The deeper your involvement in existence, the deeper your life. When you are involved totally in life, in death, in love, in meditation, in any kind of thing that you want to do, painting, music, poetry, dance, unless you are totally involved in it, you will never know the maximum, the optimum pleasure, the optimum blissfulness. People are living only at the minimum, just surviving. To be absolutely truthful, just vegetating, just waiting and waiting, and nothing happens in their life, no flowers blossom in their life, no festivals happen in their life, and their death is as ugly as their life was, because death is the ultimate culmination of your life. If you have lived totally, death is not the end. Death is only an episode, a small episode in an eternal life. You have died many times, but because you have never lived totally, you became unconscious at the moment of death. The fear brought you in a coma. That's why you don't remember your past life. The coma is stands as a barrier for the past life and their remembrance. And because you don't know your past life, you cannot understand that there is going to be life after death, that life is eternal. Birth and death are mere episodes. Thousands of times you have been into birth, into death. But when you are not allowed to live totally, when everywhere there is interference from religion, one small boy in the school, of course a Christian boy, was asked the first day he entered the school by the teacher, "What is your name?" He said, "Don't." He said, "It's strange, I have never heard such a name." He said, "I only hear this. Everything, whatever I do, don't. So I think it is my name." But the whole Christianity is doing that to everybody. It is a life negative religion. It does not allow you to live joyously. And the family is the root, because from the family starts the programming. Obviously, Christianity says that it is founded on family. And I know it perfectly well, unless family disappears from the world, these religions, these nations, these wars will not disappear. Because they are all based on family. The family teaches you, you are a Hindu, and the Hindu religion is the best religion of all. Other religions are so-so. Christianity continues the programming of children, that you can be saved only through Jesus Christ. Nobody else can save you. All other religions are just morality, very superficial. They are not going to help you. And then a child, alongside his breastfeeding, continuously is fed with all kinds of superstitions, God and Holy Ghost and the only begotten Son of God, Jesus. Heaven and hell, and children are very vulnerable because they have bound as tabula rasa. Nothing is written on them. Their minds are pure. You can write anything you want, and every family commits the crime, destroys the individual and creates a slave. Obedience is the virtue, disobedience is the original sin. And when a child from the very birth it starts being programmed, when he is very vulnerable and very soft, you can write anything. It will go on in his unconscious. You can tell him that our nation is the greatest nation in the world. Every nation is telling that. Our religion is the greatest religion. Our scripture is written by God Himself. Hindus are saying that. Christians are saying that. Jews are saying that. Everybody is doing the same crime. Christianity, of course, doing it more efficiently, more cunningly, because it is the greatest religion in the world. It uses ultra modern techniques of programming. It sends its missionaries to learn psychoanalysis, to learn how to program people, how to deprogram people. If a Hindu has to be converted into Christianity, first he has to be deprogrammed of Hinduism. Again, the tabula rasa appears. What was written is erased. Now you can write again that Christianity is the highest religion in the world. And there has been no man like Jesus Christ and will never be again, because he is the only begotten Son of God. All wars depend on the family. It has been a tradition in many nations in the past that you should contribute at least one son to the army to protect the nation, to protect the dignity and the pride of the nation. In Tibet, every family has to contribute the eldest son to the monastery. This has been done for thousands of years. As if the children are just commodities. You can contribute as if the children are money. You can give in charity. This divided world into different camps because of religion, because of politics, because of nationality, because of races, they all depend on family. Family is the root cause of mankind's thousands of wounds. In a deeper detail, psychologists have discovered a certain phenomenon they call imprinting. When a child is born, he gets the first imprint of the mother, the father, because they are there. You may not be aware what imprinting can do. When a scientist was exploring the phenomenon of imprinting, He was standing by the side of a hen's egg. And it was time for the egg to break down, and allow the small bird to come out. Ordinarily, the hen is sitting on the egg, so the first imprint is of the mother. But this scientist was standing there, so when the child came out from the egg, he saw the scientist too. That was his first imprint. The scientist could not believe his eyes. When the child became younger, rather than falling in love with any woman, he was continuously trying to make love to the scientist too. He could not believe what is happening. But he has discovered a great phenomenon, that anything that comes first in the vision of the child is his first imprint. The mother is his first imprint. The father is his second imprint. And if the child is a boy, then he falls in love with his mother. And his whole life he will suffer. All couples are suffering around the world. The reason they know not. The reason is, the boy has been imprinted by the mother, and since that time he is looking and looking, searching for a woman who will fulfill his desire, who will be his mother. Now you cannot find your mother again. Perhaps something of the mother. Lovers are at great embarrassment if you ask them, why you have chosen this woman or this man? They simply shrug their shoulders. They say, we don't know. It simply happened. It did not happen. It is not so simple as you think. You simply don't know. The woman you have fallen in love in some way resembles your mother. In some way. Of course, she cannot be 100% your mother. Perhaps her hair style is the same as your mother's. Perhaps her nose, perhaps the color of her eyes, perhaps the way she walks, perhaps the sound of her voice resembles your mother. You find that partial mother in the woman. It is your mother calling through the woman to fall in love. It is nothing to do with happening. But it is a partial thing, remember. The hairdo or the nose. What you are going to do with the hairdo and the nose? Soon you will discover on your honeymoon, my God, this is not my mother. And the girl has fallen in love with you because something of her father resembles in you. So both are searching something which is not there. So the woman will be looking at the husband and will be surprised that he has been deceived. This is not the man he was looking for. Only his mustache looked like my father. But what to do with the mustache? And the husband is looking for the mother, and the wife is looking for her father. Both are in a tremendous dilemma that how it happened. Now how to get rid of each other? And problems become difficult because church does not allow divorce. Christianity says, I am quoting the Bible, what God has joined together, let no man put asunder. God has joined wife and husband together, let no man put asunder. This is interpreted as the basis for forbidding divorce. Whatever the suffering, all old stories end up with the marriage. All ancient stories end up with the marriage. With the last statement, after the marriage, they lived in happiness forever. The truth is, after the marriage is the deluge. After the marriage is the hellfire. Not to disturb people, every story stops at marriage. In fact, this is the beginning of the story. And they have made it the end. Meeting a girl on the CD is not the real thing. Neither the girl is real, nor you are real. You are pretending to be a great man, a hero, Alexander the Great. She is pretending to be Sophia Lorena. You both are hypocrites. But hypocrisy is good on the CD. You see each other only for few seconds or few hours at the most. Hypocrisy can be maintained for few hours, but it cannot be maintained for your whole life. Once you get married, the hypocrisy becomes a burden. You cannot carry it. Two persons got married. They entered in a sea resort honeymoon hotel. The wife immediately started moving towards the bathroom and told the husband that put the light off. When I come to the bed, I don't like light on. The husband said, this is a strange thing, because I have to go to bathroom also. Light should remain on. The wife said, do you listen to me or not? Put the lights off. The husband said, it is better to say the truth. The truth is, one of my legs is false. And he took the leg off and put it aside. He said, I cannot walk in darkness. It is very difficult for me to walk even in light. The wife said, if that is the case, then it is better to be friends. He pulled both her breasts and threw them out. The husband looked at the breast lying down on the floor. He said, it is okay. He took his teeth out and threw them. The wife said, you think you are going to win me? He took out all her hair. She was bald-headed. And threw the hair on top of everything. It was between your baby hoof. Actually, something like this happens. By and by, you start dropping your hypocrisy, your falseness, your pretensions, and then all pretensions are gone. Then the woman you thought is a Juliet. It's so ordinary. Not even ordinary, but worse than ordinary. And whom the woman was thinking is a Romeo. All Romeo and the romance is finished. He turns out to be just a chicken. And then begins the story. Then it is constant frustration and constant effort to find someone else. But religion prohibits adultery. You should remain confined in your family. I sometimes wonder when Jesus said, love your neighbor, if the neighbor happens to be a woman. Perhaps he never thought about the implications. Love thy enemy, but if the enemy happens to be a woman. He was not a great thinker or philosopher. Just a poor carpenter's son. What does he know of logic and its implications? And because every family is in conflict, the husband and wife are continuously fighting. The children are growing with this constant fight. This is becoming their imprint. The boy will repeat his father's structure, and the girl will repeat her mother's behavior. When they get married, it is a constant repetition, generation after generation. Because from where they will learn how to be a husband, how to be a wife? From the mother, from the father. Those are the only people who are available in the childhood. And that is the most vulnerable time. And they learn that they fight, they use ugly words to each other. Every night there is a pillow fight. Every day the wife is nagging. The father feels the wife is just a pain in the neck and nothing else. the father tries to remain as long as in the office and then he goes to the pub. The boy is learning. The girl is also learning that when the husband comes home, the wife is going to beat him. One of my professors, professor of economics, was almost restless. A very big man, but inside a chicken. I was very friendly with him. In fact, he has to be friendly with me, because that was the time when the medium of expression was changing. From English, it was becoming Hindi. So he was accustomed of speaking English, but many times he will get stuck with some words. And I was his only hope that I will supply him the right word in Hindi. I used to give him right words. Once in a while I will once he got stuck with the word heavily, he looked at me and I was in the right mood. So I said, it means chikallas. Chikallas really means joking with each other, not haggling. Haggling is for the prize. So he started using the word chikallas, that when you go into the market and you start chikallas and the whole class laughs. He looked at me, what is the matter? I said, I don't know what is the matter. Why these people are laughing? He said, something is there, because whenever I say chikallas, they start laughing. I said, this is chikallas. When you say something and people start laughing. He said, I thought you are my friend and I have depending on you for translations and you give me such words. I said, I was in a right mood. When I am in a right mood, you should not ask me anything. I used to go to his home and there I discovered a small woman. And he used to tell me that my wife beats me. He was almost proud of it. He used to speak in the class and show that she has hit my hand. One day he showed his back that the wife has hit with a stick and there was a blood mark. And when I saw his wife, I said, you could have killed her any time just by your hand. It squeezed all the juice. He said, you don't know, she's such a pain in the neck that when I go out of my house, I feel almost like a lion. When I come back to my house, I feel almost like a wreck. Children are watching very carefully what is happening all around them. And they are learning without being taught. They will repeat the same pattern. The girl sees whenever the husband proposes the wife, that what about it? She simply turns aside and says, I am suffering from headache. In the morning, the servant did not come. The guest people at home have not come yet. Electricity is out. Problems and problems, and finally you come here. Just go down to your bed and sleep. I am suffering from headache. The girl is learning, watching carefully how to behave with the husband, how to control the husband. The boy is trying to learn how to control the wife, how to control and possess the wife. They are living in a battlefield, not in a family. There is no family anywhere. These are simply battlegrounds where man is fighting the woman is fighting the man. This professor of economics asked me, can you suggest me something, what to do? She refuses to make love to me. Always had it. I said, I will give you the medicine. I give him 2 aspirin. He said, what do you mean? I said, you do one thing today. Don't tell her that what about it. You just give her 2 aspirins and a glass of water and tell her, take it please. And see what happens. He said, you are trying to get me into trouble. You try. The wife was surprised because it was so new and original idea, and she did not believe that this idiot, her husband, can have any original idea. But she could not say that now she is having headache. 2 aspirins are enough to remove the headache. But she asked him, who has told you this? And as I told you, he was a very afraid man. He told my name. The next time when I went to their house, the wife took me aside. He said, don't give him any original ideas. Let him remain an idiot. Everything was going good. Now he comes every day with 2 aspirins. Whether I have headache or not, I have to take aspirins. Since you gave that idea to him, he carries aspirins with him. And before I can say headache, aspirins are presented to me. And I have to swallow them because I have been deceiving him continuously. But what kind of love is this? You don't allow the woman to move. If she moves, she is a prostitute. If she enjoys making love to you, that means she is not a virtuous woman. You want the woman not to move. That's why missionary posture is used. Woman underneath and the beast on top of her. And Christianity says it brought culture to the world. In the East, for thousands of years, this has been a grace that man should be under the woman, not on top of her. He is more weighty, he has more muscles. The woman is smaller and more fragile. She should be on top of the man, but on top of the man, she will be enjoying movement, because her real pleasure does not come from vagina. Vagina is absolutely insensitive. It has to be insensitive because it is going to give birth to the child. If it is too sensitive, the woman will go crazy when the child gets out. The vagina is absolutely insensitive. There is no feeling. It is a small clitoris on top of the vagina, which gives her pleasure, but that is possible only if she is allowed to move. Every woman hates love. And man understood it very early in primitive days that he is not really as competent sexually as the woman. A man can have only one orgasm. For the second orgasm, he will have to wait according to his age. The woman at any age is capable of having multiple orgasms. It was a very cunning strategy to keep the woman underneath, unmoving, closed eyes, so you can have the orgasm and the woman knows nothing of pleasure in it. She simply feels exploited, used, just like any commodity. It hurts. And man is finished within 2 minutes. At the most 3 minutes. But that is the record. The woman has not even started to get into it, and the man is out. Naturally, she hates. Naturally, she goes to listen to the monks about celibacy. She touches the feet of the saints that you are great people who live in celibacy, brahmacharya. And there is my husband, an idiot every day. And I am tired. The whole day working, taking care of children, taking care of the kitchen, taking care of the clothes, taking care of the house, of the servants. I am continuously tired, and he comes, and all that he wants is to make love. And after making love, that is 2 minutes, average, he turns to the other side and goes to sleep and starts snoring. When the man is snoring, the woman is crying and has tears. Because what kind of life is this? he has no respect for her. He is simply being used, and when used, he is of no more importance. And Christians say this is culture. They spend scriptures of Tantra know what culture is. They make it a point the man should always be under the woman so he can remain ecstatic. If he remains unmoving, then he can remain without ejaculation for as long as he wants. Not 2 minutes, not 3 minutes. And the woman should be on top and allowed to have as much joy of movement. So her clitoris gives her great orgasm, multiple, one after another. She starts groaning, moaning, shouting. All kinds of gibberish. But only then she is happy. Seeing this disparity that the man can have only one orgasm and the woman is capable of having multiple orgasms, men simply drop the idea, because multiple orgasms is dangerous. He cannot cope with it. So keep the woman ecstatic so she never comes to know that there is anything like orgasm. I don't think in India you can find 1% women who have known orgasm. I have asked hundreds of women. They don't know what orgasm is. Even in the West, only within these 30 years, 20% women have started having orgasm. It's still 80% are old fashioned. They still belong to the church and they still believe in the Bible. They still listen to all kinds of nonsense called sermons. And if a woman is satisfied having multiple orgasms, she will never be a pain in the neck. She will love you. She will rejoice. She will celebrate you. She will wait for you. She will prepare better food, better clothes. But you have destroyed all her joy. And you still want her to respect you and to love you. For what? And because she is not happy, the children become from the very beginning miserable. The mother's impact on the children is immense. She is unhappy, frustrated, always tired. The children start learning all these things. And they will repeat the same things in their life. Now, it is now a well-established psychological fact that every boy loves his mother, every girl loves his father. That is absolutely natural. The other sex is attractive. But because the girl loves the father, she starts hating her mother because she is keeping control, complete control of the father. And as the girl grows older, she does not allow any intimacy between the father and the girl. He is standing in between. He is afraid. And he is not wrong. Because the father, for the first time, when his daughter becomes 16 or 17 years old, remembers how his wife used to look. This was the woman he had fallen in love. Because the daughter looked almost like his wife when he had fallen in love. He was 17. The same is true with the boy. They love their mother, but there is no possibility of any love affair between the boy and the mother. The second opportunity is sister, which looks like the mother and younger, but Christianity and all other religions prohibit it absolutely, no love affair between the brother and the sister. So every child, whether girl or boy, they grow up in a miserable situation. And the misery deepens at the age 14. The girls become capable of giving birth at the age 13. They are always 1 year ahead the boy. They become more intelligent 1 year before the boy. Boys become sexually mature at 14. Once they are sexually mature, they are prohibited by the Christian church, by all other religions, not to have any contact with any girl. So boys have their hostels, girls have their hostels, guarded. Nobody can enter into girls' hostels. No girl can enter into boys' hostels. Naturally it creates perversion, the same perversion that is created in monasteries and nunneries. On a wider scale, boys become homosexuals, girls start becoming lesbians, because the energy is now arising to such a peak. By the time the boys and girls are 17 and a half, they have reached to the ultimate peak of their sexual energy. Now there will be decline. That is the best period to make love. That is the best period to reach to the greatest orgasmic experiences. And this you call society, this you call civilization. And it is cutting human beings from their very roots, from all kinds of joy. If it was me to decide, 17 and a half, every boy and every girl should be allowed to make love. And particularly now, when pregnancy is not necessary, there is the pill, the greatest revolution in the whole history of men, which has made the woman equal. Pregnancy was her slavery. pregnancy was her dependence on the man. But the pill for the woman was not 100% proof, because the woman may not be thinking to make love tonight. She may not be taking the pill. Husband may be out. And he suddenly comes back. And the human mind is such, it always takes chances. That's just one night without the pill, you are not going to get pregnant. You always don't get pregnant. It is only once in a while. But people get pregnant even though they were hoping that they will not get pregnant. The Christian church is against abortion. Just 2 days before, the Christians marched in America to the Senate, because the Supreme Court of America has allowed abortion as legal. Against that legalization of abortion, thousands and thousands of fundamental Christians had a long procession in protest to the Senate. What was more puzzling to me was President George Bush, immediately before the procession started, sent a message to the people who were going to protest, missionaries, bishops, archbishops, priests, and all kinds of fanatics. He sent the message that I am with you. I am against the abortion bill. So don't think that your president is not with you. I am amongst you. And I will support you, and I would like the Supreme Court to remove the law that they have made, abortion legalized. Such fear of the crowd, that's why I always say your politicians are not leaders. They don't create a revolutionary mind in the people. On the contrary, they are followers of the followers. Immediately the president sent the message that I am with you, just to gain favor of the voters, but no consideration about the poor woman who cannot afford a child, or an unmarried woman who cannot say it was Holy Ghost who made me pregnant. Nobody is going to believe her. And if a woman gives birth to a child while she is not married, her chances for marriage become almost nil. Because the male chauvinist mind wants always a virgin. You will be surprised to know There are doctors which make women virgins. Their whole expertise is to put a small, thin skin inside the woman's vagina. That is the proof that her vagina has not been penetrated by any male. Otherwise, the skin is broken. But the skin can be broken just by riding on a bicycle. The skin can be broken just by riding in a rickshaw in Pune. It does not need any male partner. The road will do the thing. In the Middle Ages, these so-called Christians who think they have civilized the world, not only the skin has to be intact, but blood should come out. So the doctors used to fix the skin and a little blood behind the skin. And the man who has married the woman proudly the next day will sew the bed sheet with blood. Friends gathered, families gathered to see whether the woman is virgin or not. And it was great pride for the man that I have got a virgin woman. What is great in being virgin? It simply means unexperienced. You will be better if you marry an experienced woman, if you marry an experienced man. Experience has a value. Inexperience cannot be supported in any argument. This family that Christians think is their foundation is their foundation only because it programs the children according to the church. It makes them slaves, it takes their dignity of individuality, it makes them hypocrites. It forces on them all kinds of lies. The greatest lie is God. And from God arise all kinds of lies. The only begotten Son, Jesus Christ, will not be there. There was no God fiction. Hell and heaven will not be there if there was no God who is going to give punishment and reward. Creating this program in the child's mind is preventing him to go beyond the mind in search, in exploration. It is against truth. Every family stands against truth. Every family stands against enlightenment. That's why I say for the first time in the whole history that Buddha and Mahavira had not renounced the world, they had simply renounced the family. It is a lie to say they renounced the world. They lived in the world. They moved with thousands of disciples, that was their world. They moved into cities, they preached and taught meditation to people. They had not renounced the world. They were trying in every way to help humanity evolve into consciousness. They were not against humanity, they were not against human consciousness growing as high as the stars, as deep as the Pacific Ocean. All that they have renounced was the Fendi. Because the Fendi was not going to help them meditate. Many sannyasins had been reporting to me that our families don't allow us to meditate. They say this is simply wasting time. Closing your eyes and sitting in a lotus posture, whom you are deceiving. Just do some good work. Serve the poor. Serve the sick. If one wants to meditate, one needs a seclusion. One needs no interference. In the beginning, at least, when meditation becomes a ripe fruit in you, then there is no problem. Then you can meditate in the marketplace. You can meditate anywhere once you know the secret. But before you have known the secret, every disturbance brings you out. But Christianity is not interested in meditation at all. It is interested in prayer. Prayer to whom? To a fictitious God. Prayer to whom? To Jesus, who is a crackpot. And no prayer is ever heard. Because there is nobody to hear it. It is not the fault of somebody above the clouds who is not hearing your prayer. There is nobody. Prayer is not the right kind of religion. Any religion that is based on prayer is a wrong religion. Only religions which are based on meditation have some quality of religiousness. Because meditation takes you inward to your very foundation of life, to the source of your consciousness. And prayer is simply instinct. Raising your hands upwards, and there is nobody. And when people talk to nobody, you call them mad. If somebody is talking to nobody, you will immediately take him to the hospital. That something is wrong with this man. He was standing under the tree and there was nobody, and he was talking and having good dialogue. And what Christianity is doing and what other prayer religions are doing, talking to nobody. These are insane people which need psychiatric help. And because every family teaches you hypocrisy, you become schizophrenic. You have your individuality repressed by a personality given by your family. You are divided into two. you will remain always in conflict, fighting within yourself with yourself. You will become two. You can become many. It depends. I was staying in a family. They had only one child, a beautiful child. I was sitting in the lawn. The child came and sat by my side. I asked him, "What you are going to become in your life?" He said, "I don't know. My father wants me to become the doctor. My mother wants me to become the engineer. My uncle wants me to become an actress. My second uncle wants me to become a politician. They are all driving me crazy. And they are all fighting. And nobody is asking me, what do you want to become? You are the first person who are asking me." I said, "What do you want? Just tell me." He said, "I have not figured it out." I said, "Then don't listen to anybody. Your father, your mother, your uncles, your brothers, don't listen to anybody. Wait. Till the time comes when you have to choose. Go into the library and look into different subjects which attracts you more, which seems to be having a certain harmony with you. Only decide then, not according to anybody else, but simply according to you." The boy stood up, he smiled, he said, "I really want to become a guitarist. In my neighborhood there is a man who plays the guitar, but don't tell anybody." I said, "That's perfectly good. Forget all about being a doctor, there are enough. Enough doctors to kill people. Don't be worried. And there are enough engineers whose bridges go on falling down. To be a guitarist is absolutely innocent. I will not tell anybody, but you remain firm. Those people will manipulate in every way. My father loved me too much, but they think it is love. He wanted me to go to a science college, either become a doctor or become a scientist or become an engineer, but first go to the science college, first graduate science and then move into a specialization." I refused. I said, "I know your love, but I know also your love is unconscious. You simply want your ambition to be fulfilled, that your doctor, your son is a great doctor, a great scientist or engineer. I am going to study religion, philosophy, logic, psychology." He said then, it was just a threat, and he repented too much. He said, "Then I am not going to support you financially." I said, "That's settled. It is obvious. I am not following your idea. Why you should support me? In fact, even if you change your mind, I am not going to take any support from you. He was thinking that how I will manage. Perhaps I will drop my idea, because he said that philosophy. Even in the universities there are, India has 100 universities, 100 philosophical departments, and there are many universities where the whole department is empty. 4 professors and not a single student. So what you are going to do? I said, I understand. I am not going to do anything. I am not going to use my education for any career, because I have decided to be good for nothing. I am going to relax and enjoy life. He said, but who is going to support you? I said, you don't be worried. You will see. So I left my house after matriculation, entered into a department of philosophy. My father thought how he will manage, but I entered into a night class. The whole day I was working in a newspaper. And in the night I will go to the university class. After 6 months he thought I must have managed somehow. He came to see me. The village was almost 100 miles away. He came to see me and he found me perfectly well. I have managed. I have found a family who simply loved me. They were not my relatives. Just the man has met me in the public park where I was discussing with few students, my colleagues, and he heard sitting by the side on a bench, he heard me discuss and he was immensely impressed. He took me by the side, he said, where do you live? I said, I don't have any place to live. He said, I have a big house. You just come with me. And when he saw the situation, what I am doing, the whole day I am working in a press, and the whole night, first part of the night in the university, and second part with my own books, not the textbook. He said, you will fall sick. Don't be worried. I have enough money. I told him, remember one thing. I am not going to return it. He said, that is settled. I said, think twice. It is a question of 6 years. You can have time to think. I will not return a single rupee back, because I will not have any money any time in my whole life. if you are giving me out of your abundance, I will accept with gratitude, but no obligation. No bragging about it that you have helped me. He said, no, that's not at all the question. In fact, you have helped me. Since you have come in my house, a strange peace has come. A silence has come. I have never been so happy and so joyous. I have all the amenities, all that the world can provide. But there was a certain emptiness inside me. You have fulfilled it by teaching me meditation. I cannot repay it back. Whatever money I spent on you is not even the interest of what you have given to me. And what you are giving to me every day. My father came, he wanted to help me. I said, we have settled it. I did not follow your idea. You simply did not arrange the finance. There is no bitterness about it. Our relationship remains the same. It was simply a disagreement. And I am at fault to disagree with you. You are just unnecessarily feeling guilty. But he said, whatever you want to do with my money, but I will give you. I said, if you want to give without any condition, I can have as much money as you can give. I can use the whole money of the world alone. Without any trouble. He used to send me money, and that money helped me to purchase as many books as possible. Now the library, you see, it has 150,000 books. Most of them are purchased from his money. His whole money that he gave to me went into purchasing books. And soon I was receiving a scholarship . That whole money went into books. Soon I was having friends all over India, and I was purchasing everywhere, in Pune, in Bombay, in New Delhi, in Amritsar, in Ludhiana, in Calcutta, in Allahabad, in Varanasi, in Madras. All over the country I was purchasing as many books as possible, as much as the friend with whom I was staying could manage. The family gives you ambition, and ambition is one of the hindrances for enlightenment. It gives you desire. It gives you a longing to be successful. And all these things create your tensions, your anxieties, how to be a celebrity. The family wants you to be a celebrity. The family wants you to be known all over the world. The family wants you to be the richest person. The family wants you to be the president of the country. All these ambitions the family creates, without knowing that all these ambitions are creating a mind which will remain continuously in anguish, suffering. Only one man can become the president of the country. What about 900 million people in this country? They are all failures. This is ugly situation to keep people feeling they are failures, unsuccessful, inferior to others. Family is the base for all pathology. I would love a world where family is replaced by commune. Psychologically, it is more healthy to have a commune where children are not possessed by the parents. They belong to the commune. When children are not given imprint of the mother and father only, they have many uncles in the commune, many aunts in the commune. Sometimes they sleep with this family, sometimes with that family. In my commune, every child belongs to everybody. He does not have a single imprint because so many people love him. Sometimes he will sleep with somebody, sometimes with somebody else, and they are invited. Now Siddhartha has come back with a girlfriend. When he has come for the first time, he was so small but so intelligent that he rarely stayed with his mother or father. I will ask the mother and she will say, I have not seen her for 15 days. He stays everywhere. With anybody who invites him, he goes. He used to have money from anybody. Just give me 10 rupees. Now he has come, grown up, is having a training to become an actor, has got a beautiful girlfriend. He has also become a sannyasi. He is a model. I want family to be replaced by a commune. And in commune there is no need for marriage. You love a woman, you live with her. Love disappears, you say goodbye. In deep gratitude that all these days were memorable, that I spent with you. All these days I will carry in my mind, in my memory, as a beautiful fragrance. They will haunt me like a dream, beautiful dream. But now, it is time for us to depart joyously. From now onwards, we will be friends. There is no need to become enemies. And both get tired. It is simply human. Family is inhuman. It forces you to live with a woman you hate. It forces you to lie with a man you want to kill. It is prostitution, it is not family. My definition of prostitution is to make love to a woman you don't love. To make love to a man you don't love. Then it is simply a long-term prostitution. A prostitute is available to you only for one night. You pay for it. Your wife is available to you for your whole life. You pay for it. It is an economic arrangement, financial. You have purchased the woman for the whole life. In a commune, there is no need of a marriage. Marriage creates the family. People should be together out of love, sheer love. And the moment they feel the love is no more there, and now hanging around each other is creating tension and anxiety, it is better to say goodbye to each other while things become too bitter. At the first sign of frustration, boredom, depart. Find out new friends. And if you have children, you can have children only if the commune allows you. Because the commune has to take care of the population. The commune is responsible not to expand the population too much that everybody becomes poor. You can have a child only with the permission of the commune. And you can have the child only with the permission of the medical board of the commune. And if the medical board suggests that your child will not be healthy, will not be very intelligent, it is better to have a child through insemination than have the child with insemination. Your love remains with your friends. Insemination does not disturb you. People will say and be proud that I have got the best insemination for my child. The best semen. You can even ask the medical board what kind of child. A genius? Healthy child who will not suffer with unnecessary diseases in his whole life? A child who will be able to live beyond the ordinary span of 70 years, 100 years, 200 years, 300 years? 300 years is a possibility. Just the right semen is needed. And just as there are blood banks, every commune should have semen banks. And medical experts should find out different qualities of different semen cells, categorize them, keep them deep frozen, and whenever somebody wants a mathematician, somebody wants a scientist, somebody wants a musician, somebody wants a mystic, just give the right insemination. And the child will belong to the commune. So you need not be worried what will happen to the child. Our children are keeping people together although their love is long way back finished. I have told you the story of a man who was 95 and a woman who was 93 went to the court. They wanted divorce. The judge looked at them and he said, your 1 foot is in the grave and you want divorce? if you wanted divorce, why you did not come before? How long you have been married? They said, we don't exactly know, but maybe 60 years, 70 years. They just said, strange, I have been dealing with the matter for years. This is the first case. Why you remain so long married if you did not like each other? They said, yes, from the very first day we did not like each other. But we had to remain married because of the children. So the magistrate asked, what happened to the children? He said, they all died. Now we are free. And we want the divorce immediately. Just 2-3 years maybe, but to live in freedom. Just even 3 years is enough. A taste of freedom. At the last moment, fortunately all children have died. It is children who are keeping the family together. Because where the children will go? What will happen to the children? If the commune takes the responsibility of the children, from the very beginning, the children should move to the commune's hostel. They can come on holidays to be with their parents or to be with their uncles, who will be thousands, with their aunts. They can choose. I want a new man in the world without any imprint. When a child lives with many women, if he is a boy, he will not have a single imprint. He will have too many imprints which will become fuzzy. He will not be able to figure out what kind of woman. Then any woman can be a tremendous satisfaction. Then love affair can last beyond the honeymoon. Otherwise, by the time honeymoon is finished, love is finished. Just see, when people are going to honeymoon, with suitcases, just married. See how fast they are going, and when they come back, just look at their faces, punctures. Look at their suitcases. Just in 7 days' time, what catastrophe has happened? I am against the family and I am for the commune. And family dispersed, church will die automatically. Nations will disappear automatically. Races will disappear automatically. The world can become one only if there are communes, not families. And the last thing that I want to say about Christianity, because this is the last lecture of this series, is about a man I have loved very much through his writings. Thomas Merton. He was a Trappist Christian. He studied in many seminaries in different theological sects of Christianity and finally ended up with the Trappist monastery in America. It is the most arduous, self-torturing, kind of theft. It is really a trap. Once you got into the trap, it is very difficult to get out of it. Thomas Merton was a world famous writer. The chief abbot of the Trappist monastery was very jealous of him. He wanted somehow to prevent his writing. Thomas Merton lived for many years in the Trappist monastery but could not find any way to his inner world, which was his interest. Everything was just outward discipline. And a strange kind of torture. I have told you the story of a Trappist monastery. A man entered in the monastery. The abbot said to him, "This is our rule in the monastery. You can speak only once in 7 years." He accepted it. He was shown the cell where he had to live. He thought, "My God, the glasses of the windows were broken and the cell was a very small cell. Just enough for you to lie down. Rains came and the water will come inside," and he was suffering from cold, sneezing, and all his clothes were wet, but he could not speak. So 7 years he suffered the rain, and the rain destroyed the mattress. It destroyed his health also. But after 7 years, he ran to the abbot and he said, "You have given me a cell which has no glasses in the window. I have suffered too much from rain." The abbot said, "Enough. Glasses will be put, just go back." And 7 years, no more speaking. Glasses were put, but when he went to the cell, then he remembered that the mattress is completely rotten. But now 7 years. So he waited for 7 years with that rotten mattress, with cockroaches and every kind of rat. But 7 years passed. They were too long, longer than 7 years used to be. It was almost eternity suffering all those cockroaches, lying down and they are moving on his face. After 7 years he went running to the abbot and he said, "You put the glasses, but I forgot to tell you at that time that the mattress is rotten and cockroaches and rats and every kind of animal is moving inside. You please move that rotten." "And remove all the cockroaches and rats." He said, "It should be done. But no more coming here for 7 years." So the mattress was removed. The cockroaches were removed. The rats were removed, but the people who brought a new mattress which was too big, so they forced it and broke the glass. Again the same story begins. The rains started coming, and from the broken window, the rats which had gone out, the cockroaches, they all came back, the whole family. Now it was too much. 7 years he could not believe that he will be surviving. But he survived. Man has immense capacity to adapt to any condition. After 7 years, as he approached the abbot, abbot said, "Don't speak a single word. Since you have come into this monastery, complain, complain, complain. I never hear anything else. Just get out of the monastery." The man could not say even what he has come to say. He has been thrown out of the monastery. After 21 years, this was the only result. Thomas Merton was a genius, intelligent man. And because he was world famous, and he was writing books on Jain, I have been looking at his books, because for 15 years I have not read anything. It is before 15 years when I used to read his books, I always thought, sooner or later this man is going to land in Japan. Because his understanding about Zen is purely intellectual, beautiful. He was writing beautiful sentences, beautiful poems, but it was all intellectual. He has no understanding of meditation. Christianity does not allow meditation. And just now I have heard Thomas Merton was a Trappist monk and a world famous author. He wanted to go to Japan to study Zen. But again and again his superiors in the monastery refused him permission. Do you see the comparison between Zen masters? If a disciple asks to go to another monastery, he is welcomed by the master. Be the chef. Find anywhere the truth. The question is truth, not me or monastery. But again and again he was refused permission to go to Japan without giving him any reason. There was no reason to give. All that he wanted was to know Zen directly, strictly, living in a Zen monastery for a few months or few years, because he has not found anything in Christianity. A letter from Rome confirming the refusal stated that his requested visit to Japan cannot possibly be the will of God. In the name of God, so many crimes. In the name of God, people are being enslaved. Now, how this is known to the Rome? What is the will of God? If Thomas Merton's whole being wants to go to Japan to learn Zen, that may be perhaps the will of God. But Rome decides, a far away monk in America, but the reason is not exactly that it cannot be possibly be the will of God. That's why refusal to go to Japan. The refusal is that anybody who will understand Zen will drop Christianity. Immediately. Christianity will look like a disease, a poison. in comparison to Zen. But finally, it happens not that they were allowing him to go to Japan, but he was decisive in his mind. There was going to be a Catholic conference in Thailand. So he asked the permission to read some papers on Catholic religion into the conference in Thailand. The deep desire was that from Thailand he will reach to Japan, not bothering about the permission. At the most, they can expel him from the church. And the church has not given him anything, so there is nothing to lose. Finally, he was allowed to visit Thailand to address a Catholic conference. At the end of his speech, he said, "And thus I fade off into the night." He had some suspicions. Some suspicions that they may poison him, they may kill him if he tries to go to Japan, because the whole conference consisted of Catholic monks, and they were all informed that keep an eye on Thomas Merton. He should not escape from Thailand to Japan. This is very close. At the end of his speech, he said to the conference, "And thus I fade off into the night." A few hours later, he was found dead in suspicious circumstances in his room. There is every reason to believe that he was killed by the Catholics. There were rumors that he was killed so that he could not travel on to Japan to study Zen. Circumstantial evidence shows that the rumors may be true. No autopsy was done on the body, which is a regular process. And particularly in the case of suspicion, he was perfectly healthy. He addressed the meeting and just within 2 hours he was dead. And he has made the indication that perhaps I may fade off into the night. No autopsy was done on the body and it was not embalmed, which is a regular procedure for Catholic monks, Trappist monks. Their bodies have to be embalmed. It took 7 days to reach his monastery in the U.S. It is only a question of at the most 20 hours from Thailand to U.S. 7 days it took. They wanted the body to decompose. Once the body starts decomposing, no autopsy is possible. You cannot know the reason why the person died. That's why it took 7 days to reach his monastery in the U.S. and had to be buried in a special casket because it was so decomposed, completely decomposed. There was no question of finding anything in it. In his last book, not published until 20 years after his death, Merton wrote, "I have a real sense that my own vocation demands a dependent. My own vocation demands a deepened and experiential study from within as well as Japanese and particularly Zen experiences." The book was not published for 20 years after his death. He also wrote, "I cannot go to Asia to seek all their sources. Some of the things I see to be vitally important, the Zen ground of all the dimensions of expression and mystery. This is an imprisonment and confinement." With this I end my arguments against Christianity. And with this I discuss the last sutra of Zen. Our beloved master, Yakusan, once asked his disciple Ungan, "I heard that you know how to deal with the lines. Is that true?" Ungan replied, "Yes, it is." Yakusan asked, "How many of them do you get and deal with?" "Six," Ungan said. Yakusan then said, "I also know how to deal with the line." Ungan asked, "How many do you get?" Yakusan replied, "Only one." Ungan then commented, "One is six. Six is one." Now, it is a very mysterious anecdote. But once you understand the symbology, it becomes absolutely simple. There are seven chakras in the human body. In Zen, they are called the seven lines. The first chakra is the sex center. The second chakra is just below the navel, which is called in Japanese hara. And if somebody wants to commit suicide, which in Japanese is called harakiri, he simply pushes a knife into the hara center. That is the simplest and without pain. A strategy to commit suicide. No pain at all. Because that center is the second center. The sex center has all the life energy gathered in it. For ordinary human beings, all the energy is gathered at the lowest center. This is just above that. So if you put a knife into the hara, the life energy is released from the hara center, which is just above it, into the cosmos. So in Japan, nobody shoots his head, nobody cuts his neck, nobody hangs himself. The only way in Japan to commit suicide is just to put a knife into the hara. A man may commit hara just sitting by you and you may not even know that he has gone dead. It is so silent. Life simply flies out . The third center is the navel. And the fourth center is the heart. And the fifth center is the throat. And the sixth center is the third eye just between your two eyebrows. And the seventh center is just on top of your head. Once you understand that these centers are significant, the sex is the lowest place in your life. And the seventh, if the energy moves from the first to the second, from the second to the third, from the third to the fourth, every center has its own expression. Your life goes on changing. For example, if energy moves from the sex center to the second center, Hara, you suddenly become aware of death. People are not aware. They think it always happens to somebody else. Obviously. You always see somebody else dying. You have never seen yourself dying. Perhaps you are an exception. It happens to somebody else always. Although the poet says, never ask for whom the bell tolls. It tolls for thee. In Christian religion, the church bell tolls to inform all the farmers in the orchards, in the fields, to come to the village, somebody has died. It refers to death. Never ask for whom the bell tolls. It always tolls for thee. When your energy is at the Hara center is the death center. You suddenly become aware that just as millions of people have died since centuries, I cannot be an exception. I will have to die. If not today, then tomorrow, or day after tomorrow. But someday, that which is born always dies. I am born, I am going to die. Birth is the beginning of death. Birth contains death in itself. Birth is the seed and death is the flower. It takes 70 years from cradle to the grave. It is a 70-year-old tree. But death is growing side by side with your life. Once you are at the sixth center, your whole concentration is on the other set. If you are not perverted Christian monk, if you are a Christian monk, then your whole attention is either towards other men. If other men are not available, then other animals, female animals, in the beginning. If female animals are not available, then male animals. Heterosexuality is between men and women, a natural phenomenon. Homosexuality is between men and men. Lesbianism is between women and women, unnatural perversion. And bestiality is between man and the animal, or woman and the animal. It is surprising how men can get perverted. I know an actual case of a woman. I had just gone to the hospital to see a patient who has been meditating with me for many years. And as I was entering the hospital, a woman was taken from a car. She was making love to a dog. But to make love to a dog is very dangerous. Most of the dangerous thing a woman can do. Because dog has a special sexual mechanism. His prick is very thin and long. So as it enters into the vagina, it is very easy. But the mechanism is such that inside the vagina, it starts becoming thicker and thicker. So getting out is very difficult. You must have seen dogs making love. How difficult it is. People are throwing stones and the dogs are dragging each other to this direction and that direction. But they cannot get unhooked. For the first time I saw a beautiful woman, wife of a very well-known surgeon. So there is bestiality. But if you are not a pervert, and this bestiality, homosexuality, lesbianism has brought the most dangerous disease in the world, Christians are 90% responsible for it, AIDS. That is the only positive contribution to the world by Christianity, AIDS positive. As your energy moves to the second center, Hara, you become absolutely uninterested in sex. It is not celibate. You have not taken any vow. Simply your energy has moved higher. Its concern becomes death. In sex, the concern was birth. Because through sex is all reproduction. Moving from sex, you have moved from birth to death. A small distance. Suddenly you become aware that death is coming and I am concerned only with trivia. Money, power, prestige, respectability. All this will be gone when death comes. I'm unnecessarily making the effort of creating a signature on the sand. A little breeze of wind, a little tidal wave, and the signature will be finished. Death comes as a tidal wave, and all your personality, all your respectability, prestige, are erased. One becomes aware that I have to find something which is beyond death. Once energy moves to Hara, the concern for search of something immortal in you becomes very predominant. And when the energy moves to the third center, your concern is no more intellectual. You don't simply philosophize, you don't read the books which say life is eternal, you don't believe. At the third center, the navel, your interest becomes experiential. Thomas Merton was at the third center. His interest in intellectual jargon was finished. He wanted something experiential. That happens at the navel. It is not coincidence that people talk about meditators as navel gazers. That is meaningful. You are gazing at the navel, not from the outside. That won't help. You have to close your eyes and go to the navel. That's what I am calling the center of your being. It is just behind the navel. That's why the navel joins you with the mother. Because your being is just behind the navel. If you are not nourished by the mother through the navel, you would not have survived 9 months in the womb. Once your energy rises to the navel, and it goes on happening in all meditations, your energy is going up. Your concern becomes meditation. You want to know on your own, not through the scriptures, what is the truth, whether there is life beyond death or no. As you move above to the fourth center, that is the heart, your whole life becomes a sharing of love. The third center has created the abundance of love. By reaching to the third center in meditation, you have become so overflowing with love, with compassion, and you want to share. It happens at the fourth center heart. That's why even in ordinary world, people think love comes out of the heart. For them, it is just a hearsay. They have heard it. They don't know it because they have never reached to their heart. But the meditator finally reaches to the heart as he has reached to the center of his being, the third center. Suddenly an explosion of love and compassion and joy and blissfulness and benediction arises in him, such a force that he hits his heart and opens the heart. Heart is just in the middle of your whole seven centers. Three centers below, three centers above. You have come exactly in the middle. That's why the person of the heart is very balanced, utterly balanced, has a tremendous grace, a duty that seems to be not of this world. His eyes are sovereign love. His hands are sovereign love. Even if he does nothing, even his presence is radiating love. It is a vibration, multidimensional. All around him, a love energy goes on flowing. Those who are receptive, their hearts will start ringing a bell. For the first time, they will hear a new music, a new harmony, a new synchronicity. The fifth center is the throat. The throat is the center of expression. When you are too full of experience, you share love at the fourth center, and you share your experience through language, through devices, from the fifth center. The sixth center is just between the two eyebrows, inside. In India, we have called it the third eye. It gives you a tremendous clarity, a vision of the whole existence as it is. And when you open your eyes, it affects even your ordinary world. Trees are more greener. Roses are more rosier. Everything around you becomes more graceful to you, of which you were never aware. Everything around you becomes more beautiful. Even wild flowers look so beautiful. They have their own individuality. They cannot be compared to roses. They cannot be compared to the lotuses. There is no comparison at all. Once you have reached to the fifth, to the sixth, the third eye, everything in your life becomes crystal clear. No questions, no answers. You know it. No belief, no disbelief. You know it. And the seventh center is when you become enlightened. The center of samadhi, the center of ultimate awakening, the center where you become a Buddha. Understanding this symbology, it will be easy to understand this mysterious anecdote. Yakusan once asked his disciple Ungan, "I heard that you know how to deal with the lions." Remember, he means by the lions the center. "Is that true?" Ungan replied, "Yes, it is." Yakusan asked, "How many of them do you get and deal with?" "Six," Ungan replied. He has reached to the third eye, the sixth center. He has managed and tamed six lions, six centers of immense energy. In fact, the Sanskrit word chakra is not rightly translated by center. Center gives you a sense of aestheticness, just like a full point. Chakra means a wheel. The energy is constantly moving. Energy cannot be static. It cannot remain in one place. It is always on the go. So chakras can be exactly represented by the wheel of energy. But I am not using it because for centuries the center has been used in English. The Christian missionaries who translated from ancient scriptures about the chakras could not make the distinction between a center and an energy wheel. And because it is an energy wheel, it is dealing with a line. You are in a whirlpool. It is going to transform you totally. When Ungan said six, he was saying that he has not become enlightened yet. But he is very close. He can see the seventh from his sixth center. It is just a little more effort, a little more deepening. And the seventh chakra, the seventh energy wheel will open up into a lotus flower. It is just like lotus flower, opening of the petals, and the light will move into the ultimate. If you commit harakiri, life moves into another room. If life moves from the head, then it moves into the cosmic. Then it is never born again. Yakusan then said, I also know how to deal with the line. He is using the word line, not lines. Ungan asked, how many do you get? Yakusan replied, only one. Yakusan was an enlightened master, a Buddha. He has reached to the seventh center. Once you have reached to the seventh center, all six centers disappear. The whole energy from all the six is moved to the seventh. Then you have only one energy field that is around your head. You have seen pictures of Krishna and Buddha and Jesus with an aura around their head. That is symbolic. That shows the person is supposed to be enlightened. Those who can see all around his head radiation, rays, his face becomes almost a sun or a moon. Yakusan saying that I have only one. Ungan then commented, and his comment shows that he is certainly at the sixth. Ungan said, one is six, because that one contains all the energy of the six. It pulls every energy from every center into the flowering of ultimate being, into becoming a Buddha. The whole energy is absorbed. Yakusan's answer did not create a puzzle to Ungan. He commented, one is six. Six is one. Just a little time more. I am moving towards one. Six will become one, just as one has contained all the six. This can be said only by a man who has reached to the sixth center, because from the sixth, the seventh, you can see. It is just there, very small distance. Everything is clear. Ongan is only one step behind Yaku-san. But he can see Yaku-san. He has gathered the whole energy of six centers into one. He is at the sixth. Any moment he will be moving to the seventh, and then six will become one. This is a beautiful anecdote between a master and between a would-be master who is going to become a master soon. Later on, when Ongan visited Isan, another enlightened master, Isan said, "I have heard that when you were with Yaku-san, you had a conversation about getting and dealing with lines. Is that true?" "Yes, it is," replied Ongan. Isan asked, "Do you continue to deal with them, or do you sometimes stop doing that?" Ongan replied, "When I want to, I deal with them. And when I want to stop, I stop." His answer is immensely beautiful and significant. A man who has gone beyond the mind to the seven centers is capable, if he wants to use the mind, he can use it. I am using it. But only when I am talking to you. When I am sitting in my room, I am not using it. A man who has reached to the highest center is capable of using any center of his being, even the lowest. If he wants to use even the lowest, it will be difficult because the distance is far away. Bringing the energy back down to the sex center will be a difficult job. But he can use it. It is not impossible. He can use any center if he wants. If there is any need. But otherwise, all those six centers remain silent. On their own, they don't pull you. They have no power over you, but you have all power over them. Ongan replied perfectly well, "When I want to, I deal with them. And when I want to stop, I stop." "When you stop," asked Isan, "where do the lines go?" Ongan replied, "Stopping is stopping. There are no more lines. There are only wheels of energy. The man of enlightenment takes all the energy into one center concentrated. All other centers are no more moving wheels. They are stopped. just as a wheel it starts moving. But if the man wants, he can bring the energy down. He can bring it to the fifth center and he can see far and wide with clarity. That will not be possible at the sixth, seventh center. Seventh center is beyond everything. You are simply no more. At the sixth, again you are. The energy comes, the circle, the wheel, it starts moving. You can bring it down to the fifth. I have to bring it down to the fifth every day when I am talking to you. Without throat, I cannot talk. But when I stop talking, the energy goes back to the seventh. I can bring it to the fourth. Then you feel tremendous love. The man who has reached to the seventh becomes the master of his whole life structure. He can do everything that he wants. And when he stops, the energy simply moves automatically to the seventh. That's why Ungan replied, stopping is stopping. Don't ask what happens to the lines. They lie dead. But if we want to make them alive, we have to bring the energy back. Then they start roaring again. It is one of the most important anecdotes that you have come across. It gives you the whole science of energy and transformation. Isha wrote, "The moon in the pine tree and with the cuckoo, ah, how glorious." This is looking from the sixth center. From the seventh center, you are simply silent. You cannot do anything, you cannot say anything. You are. It is pure isness. The moon in the pine tree and with the cuckoo. Ah, how glorious. The question from Manisha, our beloved master. One could imagine that because Christians are anti-life, they would celebrate what their religion teaches is the end of life. But even death, as well as life, is taboo. Another reason to be miserable. Would you like to comment, Manisha? Life and death are not separate. If you deny life, you will have to deny death. If you accept and rejoice in life, you will rejoice and celebrate in death. They are not separate things. Two sides of the same coin. You cannot have one side of a coin and throw away the other side. It is impossible. But a coin has to have two sides. You can have both or you can throw both. I have both. Christianity has thrown both. They have thrown life away. They have thrown death away. Both have become taboo. Neither they can rejoice in life, nor they can rejoice in death. I rejoice in life, I rejoice in death. Because life and death are just small episodes in the eternal pilgrimage, the eternal caravan that goes from eternity to eternity. It is time for Sardar Gurdjieff Singh. Peanut Punghi is studying to be a Christian monk at the Soso Celibate Seminary in Pune. But Punghi is not really bright and is shocked when he hears the story about how Jesus was nailed to the cross by the Jews. That afternoon, all the new recruits are sent out into the Pune streets to practice preaching. Punghi is walking down MG Road looking for a good spot to do his Bible basing. Suddenly he sees Irving Sepersky, a Jewish tourist, haggling over the price of a big bunch of bananas. Enraged, preacher Punghi kicks over the banana cart and jumps on top of Irving, knocking him to the ground. Then he beats on Irving until Irving finally shouts, "Stop! Stop! Why are you beating me?" "Because," replies Punghi, huffing and puffing, "you Jews killed Jesus on the cross." "Hey," says Irving, "it is not my fault. That happened 2,000 years ago." "So what?" snaps Punghi. "I only just heard about it." Mini Starlight, the glamorous California brunette, goes for a palm reading session with Madame Savazal at the California Cosmic Pyramid Shopping Mall in LA. "You are in love," announces Madame Savazal, gazing into Minnie's hand. "Really?" exclaims Minnie. "You can see that." "Sure," replies Madame Savazal. "Go on, go on," says Minnie excitedly. "He is tall, dark, and very handsome." "He is Madame Savazal." "Right again?" cries Minnie. "That's amazing." "Sure," replies Madame Savazal. "And he is 28 years old. He stands 6 foot tall, with a picture of his mother tattooed on his machinery." "My God, that is really incredible," exclaims Minnie. "Yup," replies Madame Savazal. "And he has a Swiss bank account and drives a red Ferrari." "You mean you can see all of that in my palm?" gasps Minnie. "No," replies Madame Savazal. "I can see all that in your diamond engagement ring. It is the same one I gave back to him last month." Tired of being just an ordinary Pollock and tired of being just a regular Pope, Pope the Pollock calls Cardinal Katz into the secret library beneath the Vatican. When the Cardinal arrives, the Pope is thumbing throw some pamphlets on transcendental meditation. Cats, as says Pope to the Pollock, I'm getting old and before I go, I want to learn how to fly. Fly? Ask Cats, as, okay, no problem. Oopsie. We can rent a plane. No, replies Pope the Pollock. I mean really fly. See here, just like that yogi Maharishi Mahesh Bogar. He says here, I can learn yogic hopping in 1 week. I want to fly. Cats S just shakes his head at the old Pollock and goes off to phone the Maharishi. The holy yogi immediately sends Lulu Learjet to teach the Pope the secrets of flying. When Lulu arrives, it is love at first sight for the old Pollock. The luscious Lulu works day and night with the Pope, teaching him everything she knows. After 1 week of intense study and practice, Pope the Pollock is ready to blast off into the sky on his solo maiden voyage. He steps on his rocket-shaped hat and then stands on his balcony rail high above St. Peter's Square. With his arms stretched out, he leaps into the air and starts flapping his arms widely. Suddenly, he finds himself flying, happy as a cuckoo. Pope the Pollock aims towards Lulu's apartment to see if he can surprise her. When he arrives there, he looks down and to his utter joy, he sees Lulu stretched out naked on the roof, sunbathing. Quickly unfastening his robes in mid-air, Pope the Pollock sweeps down and lands bang right on top of Lulu and makes wild love to her. I bet that really surprised her, explains Cardinal Cats S to the Pope 2 hours later. I sure did. Replies, it sure did. Replies the battered and bruised Pollock Pope, but not half as much as it surprised the Holy Ghost.
Body to be completely frozen.
This is the right moment to look inward. You have to reach to the very center of your being. Gather your life energy and rush towards the center with total consciousness and an urgency. as if this is going to be your last moment. Faster and faster, deeper and deeper, as you start coming closer to your being, a great serenity descends over you, a tremendous silence deepens. Flowers of peace showering on you. As you reach to the center, you are no more the same person you used to be. At the center, you are the Buddha. At the center, you are pure awareness, pure witnessing. Buddha consists only of one quality, witnessing. Now witness, you are not the body. Witness, you are not the mind. Witness, you are not the seven subtle bodies behind the physical body. Witness, finally, that you are only a witness, a pure mirror reflecting. No reaction, just reflecting. This is the state of the Buddha. To make this witnessing more clear, Nivedana, relax, let go, but keep remembering you are a Buddha. And the Buddha has only one quality, witnessing. Witnessing is the alchemy of ultimate transformation. As you go on deepening the witnessing, you start melting just like ice into the ocean. Gautam the Buddha auditorium suddenly turns into an ocean without any waves, without any ripples, utterly silent and peaceful. A great ecstasy takes possession of you. All around you, there is a melody you have never heard before. All around you, there is a dance of energy, pure energy, that you have never even dreamt. All around you, there are fountains of life juice. Drink as much as you can, and gather as many flowers of the beyond as you can. And remember to persuade the Buddha to come along with you. He has to become your reality. He has to become your daily, ordinary, routine life. You have to dissolve into him, he is your eternal being, he is your timeless beyond. With him you experience for the first time the ultimate blissfulness, and a great benediction you can share with the whole world, and still it will be increasingly flowing from your sources, which are infinite. Before Nivedana calls you back, gather all these experiences and persuade the Buddha. He has to come with you. First, he will be a shadow behind you. Soon, you will be a shadow behind him. And finally, there is no shadow to the Buddha, because he is only pure transparent witnessing. A transparent thing does not make any shadow. The day you will experience this transparency of being will be the greatest day of your life. You have become awakened. You have arrived home. Long has been the night, too long, too dark. But now, the day you become enlightened, all darkness disappears. Now there will be no sunset. You will live as life, as laughter. Your whole existence will become just the pure dawn. This is what Yaku-san says, isness is my business. This is what I say unto you, isness is my business. I don't give you any philosophy, I don't give you any religion, I give you only that which you are. I take away all that is false from you, and leave only that which is your eternal being, the Buddha, the awakened one. Nivedana, come back, but come back in deep silence, in great grace. Peacefully, just sit down like the Buddhas, remembering the golden path that you have traveled, remembering the experiences at the center, remembering your eternity, and remembering that Buddha has come more closer to you. Just go on meditating. One never knows any moment you will disappear and only Buddha will be left behind. It is going to happen to everybody who is earnestly searching it. It is your nature. It does not come from outside. It grows from within, just like a lotus. It comes from all your uglinesses, all your trivia, mundane affairs, all your anger, grief, all your rage, all your hate. Just like the lotus comes out of dirty mud and dirty water. But it rises above the dirty mud and the dirty water. And it opens its petals only when the sun comes on the horizon. Meditation will bring the sun on the horizon, and meditation also will bring your lotus to the seventh center. There is no other miracle in the world than meditation. It is the only science of transforming you into a new man, into a superman. The superman is needed very much, urgently, because only the superman can prevent this beautiful planet from being destroyed by pygmy politicians. By ugly religions, by this whole status quo, all these wasted interests are going to destroy the most beautiful planet in the universe. You can do only one thing to save it, and that is to become a Buddha and spread your Buddhahood, share it. We have to surround the whole globe with Buddhas. They are our only hope. But I am not hoping in vain. You are going to be my witnesses. Okay, Manisha?
Yes. That's the way of the heart. That's the way of the heart. That's the way of the heart. Shine through.